how to get to Buckland. I just need directions when I'm in Buckland. Why did I do this?
It's time for another Local Hero Spotlight with Claire Morneau from CESA, the local hero, folks, and Lindsay Allen from Fern Hill Farm in Buckland.
Yeah, we're here in Upper Buckland. We are an agroforestry-based vegetable farm, and this here is our alley cropping system. We farm about 3 acres. It's a low to no-till farm, and we grow a lot of vegetables integrated into our perennials, fruit, berry, and nut trees as well.
What's agroforestry? If people have heard that but can't figure it out.
In its barest form, we could say it's the integration of trees and shrubs into our agricultural systems. So for us, that looks like an alley cropping system, which we can walk over and
look do
if
it.
You want. So we'll stop here because you can see some good, or kind of a view of what's going on. So an alley cropping system, if we think of like a traditional orchard system, we just have rows of trees, whether they're fruits or nuts. And what we do in an alley cropping system is we spread out those rows of trees and we say, what can we grow in between those? Normally, if an orchard, we'd be waiting 5 to 10 years until we have like a return on our investment of actually fruit or nut production. And so here we're growing annuals and other perennials in between our longer term. I think of it like my long-term investment, the trees and the fruits. And so we have a lot of annual production over here. Our main tree rows, we're looking at chestnuts, Asian pear, peaches, and quince. And then we have, so if we picture this in 5 years, we're going to have much bigger trees here. So there will be a dappled shade. So we chose honeyberries, which are a shade tolerant berry. We have black raspberries and red raspberries, rhubarb, which kind of grabs that sunlight first in the spring before things leaf out. Same with, we have a lot of asparagus as well. While these trees are small, we're utilizing the space in between it to grow a lot of our annuals for farmers markets, CSA. And so I went to school for agroforestry and there's a lot of like great examples of large agroforestry systems in the Midwest that are doing awesome things. And I wanted, my background though is in vegetable farming, and I wanted to say like, how could we do a smaller scale, a few acres, how do we integrate more perennials into our annual production? Some of the motivation being, you know, the current climate crisis that we're facing is like, how can we stabilize our systems? When we planted, this is only 4 years old. When we planted it, it was that huge flood. I don't know if you remember from four years ago. And so we had planted everything. They'd been in the ground for like 3 months and we lost over half of the annuals that were here and we lost zero of the perennials. And so those are deep roots in the ground holding onto soil. We have dappled shade that when we have these extreme heat events is actually good for our annuals, is having a little bit of that dappled shade. It also is reducing, you know, wind, these high wind events that we're also having as part of the climate crisis that we're in. With the alley cropping system, I'm really trying to think of like, how can we create these symbiotic relationships where we get to feed people with the annuals, because we do have mostly annual based, you know, diets here, but also invest in the long term of the farm, which is, you know, a lot of our perennials here. And I like to think, I'm getting older. I'm like 39. I'm not that old.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You're so old.
But I'm like, I like to think that like, you know, annual production is a lot of this. And I'm like slowly building the farm.
Lindsay bent over to show us how hard it is to bend over the older you get. Watch, I'll show you.
Right? And then we can slowly, as I get older, start to stand up and harvest fruit, nut, berries, and not be working like on my knees and bent over quite as much.
That's what your child is for.
Exactly. Yes.
That's why children are born. For farming.
Free labor.
Or to drive you home from the hot El Warren at 1 o'clock in the morning. Thanks, Enzo.
So we have the honey berries here, which will be ready in about 1.5 to 2 weeks. They're really early berry around here. They're like our first one. And then come mid-July, we'll have black raspberries. About usually 1.5 to 2 weeks later, we'll have red raspberries. And then we just planted fall-bearing raspberries as well.
I don't think I've never had a honey berry.
They're like blueberries, but longer.
You're like the first person who actually knows what they are. that's not totally true, but most people, so I'm impressed. They are. And I always describe them like, they're like a weird-looking long blueberry that tastes something between like a blueberry, a grape, and like some funk. They're in the honeysuckle family. And I think in terms of like a climate change crop, they're very hardy. And since they fruit really early, they're grown traditionally like in Canada and a lot actually in Japan. And so they have a very short growing season. So I think as like climate weirding happens, they're a pretty cool crop. And then also like having a crop that can grow in shade, too, is pretty unique. I love them fresh. They're just a pretty delicate fruit, so we're going to be freezing a lot of this crop to then experiment with making a cordial out of them. But they're super high in antioxidants. They're really healthy. They're delicious. They're fun.
We're with Lindsay Allen at Fern Hill Farm in Buckland and Claire Morneau from CISA, the local hero folks.
I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about your background. You said you went to school for this, and you have a history of rooftop farming.
Yes.
On a hospital.
On a hospital, yeah. Very different from here. I've been farming for about 15 years. I originally went to school for social work and then immediately got into farming. I worked at farms in high school, though. And
did you grow up in this area? Where did you grow up?
In Massachusetts, but north of Boston.
Uh-huh.
And my mom has a very green thumb, so I feel like I grew up like outside and playing in her gardens, and that kind of definitely fostered a love for the outdoors. But I didn't really start my farming career until after college. But then I went back to school and got a master's in agroforestry while I was working at the Boston Medical Center. Yeah, the farm that I was managing before this for 5 years, I helped start the rooftop farm at Boston Medical Center, which I loved. It was a wonderful job getting to grow food on a roof. It was very weird, too.
And do they use that in the hospital? I mean, we talked with Congressman Jim McGovern every week. We talk about food as medicine a lot.
Farm. That's where first met him, was actually on the rooftop farm there.
Because hospital food, sorry to all the hospital listening, usually garbage and terrible for you if you're trying to heal.
Not BMCs. Okay, they have amazing food. To me, I could like wax poetic about Boston Medical Center for hours. But they have a really holistic approach to healthcare and wraparound care. And so for them, they really have a long time believe that food is medicine. And so for them, trying to like live more deeply into that ethic, starting a farm made a lot of sense. They have a teaching kitchen. They have a food pantry on site. And every person gets screened for food insecurity. And then they get a prescription to the pantry if they're found to be food insecure. So we grew for that pantry. We did a lot of classes. Patients would come out on the farm, harvest, learn how to grow, bring it back to the teaching kitchen. We ran summer camps. We had an in-hospital farmer's market as well. I loved it, but I was ready to not be on a roof and in a city and get back on the ground farming. And
no more farming the concrete jungle.
But I also, it was a time, my mom is a retired midwife and she was retiring, and our kind of family long-term goal had been to try to buy a farm together where she could age in place, and then where myself and my partner and then my sister and her wife and their kid, where we could all live together and have an intergenerational farm. And so the timing was such, it was like a year into the pandemic. So it wasn't great timing, but we searched for about 7 months and then ended up finding this lovely farm.
Yeah, or it was the perfect timing.
Or was it the perfect timing?
The pandemic is the best control-alt-delete we've had as an opportunity our lifetimes.
What it was is that we were competing against everyone who was like, oh, wait, I think I want to live in the countryside.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, this has been a long-term dream for us for like many, many years.
I'm not a rich New Yorker. I'm a farmer. Get out of my way.
Yeah. No, literally.
The people who we see on newer farms aren't always doing it intergenerationally the way that you planned it. Why was your whole family on board with, like, let's go get a farm as a family?
A key thing is I'm the only farmer. Everyone else has off-farm jobs, so that financially works for everyone. Everyone helps. They're mowing. When it's an all-hands-on-deck situation, people come down. Like, the fam comes down and helps, for sure. Would not be possible without them, including my husband's, like, extended family come out and help all the time.
This is your mother-in-law's part of the land, you were saying, too,
this
right?
is my, yeah, but my husband's parents and aunt and uncle own this part of the land, and then I lease it from them, and then the rest of the farm, which we'll go to in a little while, my part of the family owns.
That's cool.
I mean, as a farmer, it's like I never would have been able to afford land if it hadn't been that, you know, my mom sold her house, she was able to make the down payment, and then myself, my sister, and my partner, and mother and sister-in-law all pay the mortgage. So that was the kind of trade-off. And then we get to have the benefits of our kids growing up, grandmother here and helping, and then we've never had to like pay for a babysitter because we have five adults on the land. So there's definitely a lot of benefits. It's definitely not a straightforward system either. Yeah, and it's something that we'd been thinking about and talking about for a really long time, and wanted to support my mom to be able to like age in place, and knew she wanted to be somewhere where she could have a big garden and be outside a lot, and it worked.
We're better than Buckland.
I mean, a farm is basically a really big garden,
yeah,
so
get
success.
Can we go look at the rest of your really big garden? Because I was promised to ride in the back of a pickup truck.
Yes, we can all hop into the truck.
We rarely get to do this because it's technically not legal.
Yeah.
But like,
I haven't ridden in the back of a pickup truck in a long time.
No one's going to say anything about it if we're on your farm.
Come get me, Coppa.
All right, well, let's hop into the truck.
Yep. Claire, you gotta stop wearing skirts of these things because you're always climbing over something on our adventures.
I have shorts underneath always.
Just in case.
That's smart.
Yay!
Lindsay's gonna lock us in the back of the pickup.
Alright, hold on.
Man, it really has been years since I've been in the back of a pickup truck.
Me too.
This is great.
Dang, office job.
This is your office job today, Claire.
Yes.
Well, Red Wing Blackbird.
Yep.
David Sibley, you would be so proud of me for continuing to recognize the one bird I can recognize.
I mean, it does have pretty significant markings.
All right. Now we're at part two of Fern Hill Farm in Buckland. Getting out of the truck.
That was great.
Well, this is our first fields that it's a no-till field that we opened up 5 years ago when we started the farm. The alicropping system that we are just at is 4 years old. We worked with Interlace Commons, which is an agroforestry organization that helps support and train agroforestry farmers and technical support providers. But yeah, this was started 1 year before that. We have our little processing shed here, which you can't see from here, but there's 12 solar panels on it. And so that runs and gives us all the electricity to run our walk-in cooler, our fans, and everything for the high tunnel and greenhouse here.
And both of those are pretty big. That's a big greenhouse and a pretty big high tunnel too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this high tunnel, we got through an NRCS, grant. It's a 100-foot high tunnel. We actually only just put it in last year. I'm so grateful for it. Uh-huh. I love it. We're about to tomorrow put in all our tomatoes. There's some spring production in there right now. And then we'll be rolling it over into tomato land starting tomorrow. Mm-hmm. This is all no-till. I tried to make it what I call human scale. So the beds are, some of them are 50 feet and some of them are 100 feet. So that it's not too intimidating for 1 to 3 people to work at. But we have our garlic patch and some winter rye way down in the left corner there. And then a lot of our alliums here and spring production. And then our house, you can kind of see a little of it right up there. So I do a lot of walking up and down that very steep hill. Keeps me in shape.
Yeah.
It's interesting topography because if we look this way, you can't see, but there's a pond actually right below us and then the Clesson Brook. And so we're in this really interesting strip of land that's sandwiched between, that's considered prime soil. It's beautiful soil on the sandier side. Oh, and now we're seeing my husband Jeff and then my son Jory coming to visit. He doesn't go to daycare on Wednesday, so
they're coming in on a bike.
They're coming in on the new e-bike so he could bike him to school.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
You were talking about putting in that other field in 2023 when all that flooding happened. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what the land has revealed to you that has changed maybe your original plans or made you rethink how you want to use it?
Yeah, that's such a good question. You know, I think in a perfect world, I would have been able to sit and observe for a year of what this landscape is and was and wants to be. And I didn't really have that, but I do try to sit with the land and observe what's going on, what's working, what's not, where am I fighting too hard against nature? Where can I utilize that? I think one of the things that helps me indicate that I'm moving in the right direction is I've seen a huge increase in pollinators and and it's so silly, but spiders mm-hmm. in the past 5 years. And I'm this is a great sign of ecosystem health. This, before we were here, this was hayed for about 50 years. And then before that it was potatoes. And so it's definitely been a big transition for the land. And from my perspective, weed management has been a huge issue just because we're turning pasture land into, food production. And trying to do that in a no to low till way, means that there's a lot of work that has to go into weeding, especially coming from a rooftop farm where weeding was not a factor in my day. And I definitely took that for granted coming back onto land. I'm like, oh, wow, so many weeds.
Yeah, the volunteers, they've shown up and they won't go.
And it's weeds are just a plant that is in the wrong place. And so I'm always trying to say, well, what is that telling me? That's the earth telling me it wants to be covered. So how can I beat that weed to being covered? So I use mulch, I use cover crops, I plant more densely. And that way that cover happens before the weeds in a perfect system. I still do a lot of weeding. But I do, weeds are telling us things. They're indicators.
Weed is always telling me things. That's why I try to avoid it. Maybe once every 2 years.
Wow.
That's why I try to avoid it.
Looking at the land now that you've got some of your process in place, mm-hmm. how does expansion fit into your future / are you looking, this looks like meadow to me, mm-hmm. is re-meadowing some of this land to increase that pollinator input a thing that is on your radar too, considering you have a lot to work with here.
Yeah, we drove on the truck through stuff that is just meadow right now.
So yeah, you drove through two fields, which we, our neighbor who runs the cow farm, he hays those fields. He was haying these fields before, so I definitely let him hay those fields because I feel bad that I took these out of his hay production, but he also hays a ton of fields.
Try not to let him hay until July, so the bobolinks could be there.
That's literally what we do. And he only gets one cut from our fields because we've seen, actually, in this little strip here beyond our fence, we've had a bobolink.
There's one right there in that sumac.
Oh, cool.
And heard us talking. And so we don't. We're, like, one of the only people around here who don't let them. And we felt a little woo-woo in the beginning. We're like, we saw bobolinks. You can't hear.
Direct them to the Fabulous 413 podcast from last week when we talked to acclaimed birder David Sibley.
Yeah.
He said, farmers, don't do it. Don't do it till July.
Exactly. And it was actually my mom who right from the beginning said, we're not haying until July. From the first year to the second year, the increase in fireflies that we saw from letting that grow until like the second or third week in July, especially from up there, you look and it's just literally this twinkle that just happens. And to me, that's like another sign of like ecosystem health too.
So yeah, a magic fairy sign. That's the best part of it.
And I have no desire to be a huge farm. We are going to be putting in one more acre of alley cropping next year, but it'll be a lower intensity than that one. Part of that will be actually flowers. I think I'll know that I'm in a good place farming when I can put more attention into like riparian buffers and my borders. I've worked on, 20 acre farms. I've worked on quarter acre farms, and I don't want to be a huge farm. I want to have a low stress. I have a few part-time employees. I have the help from my family, and like that works for me right now. And I'm trying to continue to keep it, which is hard because there's such a demand. We have, we have a CSA that we run. We do farmers markets. We grow for another CSA. So the demand is there, but it's like, how much do I want to be doing for myself, especially now with like having a son where I'm like, I want to just spend time with you.
Yeah.
It's an interesting balance of what is too much and what is enough.
We learned what riparian buffer are with the farm that was the founder of the modern American CSA system in Egremont. Yep. But if you could remind us what riparian buffers are.
Yeah, they are plantings along a riparian zone, so a wet zone. So we have our pond, we have below that, we have the Clessant Brook, we also have this kind of marshy area here. And so it's intentionally planting plants that support, often are filtering out things that we wouldn't want in our water system and creating habitat for pollinators, for birds, for animals. But it is that buffer that's like also holding in soil in place in big rain events. But I think of them also, sometimes they're like, there's also the lesser version, like a filter strip. We'll slowly be spending some more time on that in the next coming years.
Sorry, farm whose name I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Indian Line.
Oh, yeah. Indian Line. Thank you, Claire.
I wasn't there for that one, but I know that.
That's because with our other Berkshire.
This is our other farm.
Agricultural adventures. Is there still room in your farm share this year for Fern Hill? And so.
Yeah, we have a space for a few. Ours is a little bit of a different model. It's a once a month pickup. I felt like there were a lot of farms around here that do the weekly model, and a lot of our neighbors are a little bit older, and I run weekly CSAs, and I feel like some of the feedback for people who don't participate in CSAs is like, oh, I can't handle that much food. It's too much. And so I was interested, like, how do we reach the people who aren't the maybe everyday foodies or who can't handle tons, or maybe that's not fun for them, but still want to be helping support farmers or having local food. And so we do a once a month from July to November pickup. That's about a week and a half's worth of food for a family. And there's still a few spots. We do about a quarter of it is free. So other CSA members help support and subsidized about a quarter of the shares for the community. And then we have a lot of old people, which is great. And a lot of our, like literally over half the neighborhood is signed up for it. And this is our second year doing that. But you can, if you go to our website, fernhillfarmma.com, you can sign up there, or you can find us on Instagram as well. We'll have the first pickup the first weekend in July. We're also every weekend at the Ashfield Farmers Market. And then starting next weekend, we'll be up Friday at the Shelburne Falls Farmers Market as well. And then we grow for the Hilltown Mobile Market too. So some of our produce is there at their store and then distributed out to in their mobile market model as well.
When you think long term, do you imagine that you're always going to want to have some kind of annual production mixed in with what you're doing? Or is the vision really like, this is to make sure that you have income and something growing, but you hope to eventually be just in fruits and nuts and bush, shrubs?
I would say a little of both. I want to lessen my annual production. And I also do a little bit of catering. I love cooking. And so I'm hoping to integrate more of that into the farm. So yeah, annuals, because it's what most of our diet is. I will always be growing some kind of annuals, but I do hope to follow a more perennial rhythm in my farming. And I like the idea of having like these kind of bigger, like ups and downs throughout the season of following the different fruit and berries. And then doing a little bit, like maybe just a CSA. Yeah, I hope to reduce my annuals.
Greenhouses are important for like seed starting and a lot of other things, especially up in the hill towns where the temperature can be like 10 to 15 degrees different.
Yes.
But like how do these greenhouses fit into your perennial schedule or into creating a more perennial schedule for you?
The greenhouse itself is just where I do all the seed starting, the high tunnel. But I would say they both are pretty annual focused, right? And by pretty, I mean they are completely annual focused. That's not to say down the line I might start doing something different inside of them. But for now, they really are here to support the annuals, especially the high tunnel with like tomatoes and then greens in the spring and fall. And I love working in there. I didn't think I would, but I absolutely adore it. It's a beast to put them up. I actually compared it to like having a baby. It's like being pregnant. I'm like, this is the worst and never doing this again. And then you have the baby and you're like, oh my gosh, let's do it again. It's like, it was so miserable putting it up, and then it expands your season so much. And I just love the microclimate that it creates, and it's so many opportunities. And it's like a place I can be like nitpicky and like go in and prune. And so about the end of last season, I was like, let's do it again. Let's get a second one. And my husband had to be like, do you remember what it was like?
We'll say that you still have only one child, as far as I know.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
So you read into that metaphor, whatever you will.
And only one greenhouse. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to discover your limits.
It's kind of amazing that you've only been here like 4 or 5 years. I feel like it's really, really impressive.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's really great too that you've got this contiguous land, that you have a place on the land that you can live. It's a rarity anywhere really, but in Massachusetts in particular. So you've really done it right. You got a multi-family, multi-generational thing going on here. So it's pretty inspirational.
Thank you for reflecting that back. We feel very lucky. And one of the requirements when we were looking for a house and farmland, my husband was like, I have to have a sidewalk. And I was like, well, I need at least 8 acres. We're never going to find a place. And then we came here and there's a sidewalk. It ends like 20 feet past our house. But I said, you got it. Check. This is the place. I have farmland. We have space for everyone. And there's a sidewalk. It's such a wonderful neighborhood. I feel so lucky to have stumbled into this. Our neighbors are so supportive and wonderful. And then we're in close proximity to a lot. Having never lived in the hill towns, or I'm like, wow, there's so much going on. You could drive through and not know, but there's so much like underlying culture. The farmers have been so supportive, you know, Foxtrot Farm and Good Bunch Farm. And it's just a great farming ecosystem that I found myself in. And it's not competitive. Like, there's enough, it feels like, for everyone.
Let's go meet your baby and then go back in the pickup truck.
Hi, Jory.
Hi, you guys.
Hi, I'm Ozzy.
Hey, I'm Jeff.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet
you.
Hi,
Khalees.
Hey, little dude.
And this is Claire.
Hi.
Jeff.
Hi, Claire.
Jory.
Nice to meet you.
You don't have to say hi to us.
I'm a little shy.
Yeah, I get that way, too.
I've only seen this bike online.
Pretty nice.
I've had that bell, though.
Yeah.
The hamburger bell.
It's a good one.
I first originally started listening to you all because he started listening to you all. I was like,
cool.
You need to listen to them.
Oh, thanks.
He's the pathway of how I started listening.
Appreciate it.
Hope it's still useful.
Has Lindsay told you about her, like, GBH super fandom?
No.
No.
I just love, I listen to Jim and Margie pretty religiously.
Because you were from the Boston area.
Boston area, so that's how I started. So I feel like I have grown like literally thousands of vegetables to the sounds of Jim and Margie's voices and love them. And so
how does the kale like when he says, can I just say?
I almost hesitate to say this because it gets me nervous.
They don't like it. No, no, I'm kidding.
Well, now we're officially GBH too, so.
I know, that was how, through him and then through Jim and Margie. That they now are playing over NAPM, which is cool.
So,
and then you all were on a few weeks ago.
That's right. Yeah, for 413 now.
413.
We had an NAPM morning. We watched a little bit of Mr. Rogers today.
Yay!
I love all of this. Mr. Rogers is like my favorite.
You like Mr. Rogers?
He dresses up as Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, I have a sweater just like him. Let's make the most of this beautiful day.
You've been singing the song too.
Well, cool.
All right, want to hop in?
Great to meet you. Yeah, let's get back in the pickup truck.
See you later.
Bye. Thanks for listening.